But maybe when we're off duty we could take a... Got to go! Angua turned and ran. The moon's halo was already visible over the rooftops of Unseen University. Okay, well, right. Tomorrow, then, Carrot called after her. Angua could feel the world spinning as she stumbled through the shadows. She shouldn't have left it so long. She stumbled out into a cross street with a few people in it, and managed to make it into an alley mouth, pawing at her clothes. She was seen by Bundo Prung, recently expelled from the Thieves' Guild for unnecessary enthusiasm and conduct unbecoming in a mugger, and a desperate man. An isolated woman in a dark alley was just about what he felt he could manage. He glanced around and followed her in. Silence followed for about 5 seconds, then Bundo emerged very fast and didn't stop running until he reached the docks, where a boat was leaving on the tide. He ran up the gangplank just before it was pulled up and became a seaman, and died 3 years later when an armadillo fell on his head in a far-off country, and in all that time never said what he'd seen. But he did scream a bit whenever he saw a dog. Angua emerged a few seconds later and trotted away. Lady Sybil Ramkin opened the door and sniffed the night air. "Samuel Vimes, you're drunk!" "Not yet, but I hope to be," said Vimes in cheerful tones. "And you haven't changed out of your uniform." Vimes looked down and then up again. "That's right," he said brightly. "The guests will be here any minute. Go on up to your room. There's a tub drawn, and Willikins has laid out a suit for you. Get along with your—" "Jolly good." Vimes bathed in lukewarm water and a rosy alcoholic glow. Then he dried himself off as best he could and looked at the suit on the bed. It had been made for him by the finest tailor in the city. Sybil Ramkin had a generous heart. She was a woman out for all she could give. The suit was blue and deep purple, with lace on the wrists and at the throat. It was the height of fashion, he had been told. Sybil Ramkin wanted him to go up in the world. She never actually said it, but he knew she felt he was far too good to be a copper. He stared at it in muzzy incomprehension. He'd never really worn a suit before. When he was a kid, there'd been whatever rags could be tied on, and later on there'd been the leather knee breeches and chainmail of the watch. Comfortable, practical clothes. There was a hat with the suit. It had pearls on it. Vimes had never worn any headgear before that hadn't been hammered out of one piece of metal. The shoes were long and pointy. He'd always worn sandals in the summer and the traditional cheap boots in the winter. Captain Vimes could just about manage to be an officer. He wasn't at all sure how to become a gentleman. Putting on the suit would seem to be part of it. Guests were arriving. He could hear the crunch of carriage wheels on the driveway and the flip-flop of sedan chair carriers. He glanced out of the window. Schoon Avenue was higher than most of Moorpork, and offered unrivalled views of the city, if that was your idea of a good time. The Patrician's Palace was a darker shape in the dusk, with one lighted window high up. It was the centre of a well-lit area, which got darker and darker as the view widened and began to take in those parts of the city where you didn't light a candle because that was wasting good food. There was red torchlight around Quarry Lane. Well, Troll's New Year, understandable. And a faint glow over the high-energy magic building at Unseen University. Vimes would arrest all wizards on suspicion of being too bloody clever by half. But more lights than you'd expect to see around Cable and Shear, the part of the city that people like Captain Quirk referred to as Tiny Town. "Samuel!" Vimes adjusted his cravat as best he could. He'd faced trolls and dwarfs and dragons, but now he was having to meet an entirely new species. The rich. It was always hard to remember afterwards how the world looked when she was dans une certaine condition, as her mother had delicately put it. For example, she remembered seeing smells. The actual streets and buildings, they were there, of course, but only as a drab monochrome background against which the sounds, and yes, the smells, seared like brilliant lines of coloured fire and clouds of, well, of coloured smoke. That was the point. That was where it all broke down. There were no proper words afterwards for what she heard and smelled. If you could see an eighth distinct colour just for a while, and then describe it back in the seven-coloured world, it'd have to be something like a sort of greenish-purple. Experience did not cross over well between species. Sometimes, although not very often, Angua thought she was very lucky to get to see both worlds. And there was always 20 minutes after a change, when all the senses